The cry drew the branch wraith's attention away from the enraptured beastkin. Ahead of her, she saw the swine-faced beasthound rushing in her direction. Even as she started to conjure another magical bolt, the creature was leaping for her, its array of eyes glaring with rabid fury. Before the beasthound could lock its jaws around Kyra's neck, a dark figure sprang into view. Kyra recognized the lunging shape as that of Ishia, a dryad she had watched over since her first blooming. Quickly, she banished the spell she had started to conjure, lest its violence afflict the young dryad as well as the corrupt beast. Ishia crashed against the beasthound, throwing it away from its intended victim. The creature struck the ground hard, but with a flash of motion, it was back on its feet and snapping at the dryad. Ishia's talons raked the beast's side, popping one of its many eyes. It replied by sinking its fangs into her leg and worrying at the limb with its brutal strength. Bits of bark and spurts of blood sap flew in every direction. Kyra flew to Ishia's aid. She stabbed her hand at the beasthound, her thorn-like fingers piercing its thick hide. The creature released the dryad's leg. It growled at the branch wraith, but when she struck at it again, the thing scurried away. It dashed around the melee, skirting the other dryads as they felled the rest of the beastkin.
"Do not let it escape," Kyra urged the other Sylvaneth.
Only Nias was in position to intercept the beasthound. Even Kyra could not see the dryad as she shifted her colouring to blend into the trees. The horribly mutated invader detected the lurking Sylvaneth. It darted around Nias, easily distancing her on its six legs as she hurried after it.
"Pursuit is useless," Kyra sent the thought to Nias. "It will be gone from the Thornwild before you can catch it, and there might be more of its herd waiting outside the forest."
Kyra felt Nias's disappointment, but knew she would obey. Yanir and the others had quickly dispatched the enraptured Twistflesh, killing them before they could break free of the dryad's song. Kyra turned towards Ishia. The young dryad was peeling bits of broken bark from where the beasthound bit her. Syrupy blood sap oozed from the exposed wood beneath. It was an ugly wound, but Kyra considered it could have been worse. Sometimes the very bite of a creature of chaos was enough to spread its corruption. She had seen quick blood rapidly degenerate from such bites, befouled by the touch of chaos. Sylvaneth would suffer a more gradual decay, sometimes taking many seasons to display any trace of blight.
"I do not sense any contamination," Kyra told Ishia, after letting her essence briefly share the dryad's body. "You are fortunate." "I could not allow that mongrel to..."
Ishia did not finish her statement. Kyra would not let her.
"Your intention was admirable," Kyra said, "but you must use better judgment before you act. Had the beast's bite spread its corruption, what could have been done for you? I am priestess of the wild. I have protections against such blight, defenses you do not."
She gestured to where the beast hound had fled. She considered explaining that without Ishia's intercession, she might have prevented the creature from escaping, but Kyra thought better of it. The young dryad was already humbled enough. It would serve no good to prune her confidence further. Nias beckoned to Kyra. She stood over one of the twist flesh she had killed in the melee. As the branch wraith came near, the carcass was turned towards her. There was a crude scar running across the brute's shoulder, a mark that had been carved there when it was young.
"I recognize the brand," Nias said.
Kyra stared at the ugly scar, a primitive resemblance to a horned skull.
"As do I," she replied after a moment. "See if the others have the same brand."
It was possible that this brute was a stray from another war herd. Or maybe it was an old brand. If there were younger twist flesh among those who had been killed, it might be that the worry she felt was unfounded. He might be dead, and some less fearsome chieftain ruling in his stead.
"The marks are the same,"
Yanir reported as she inspected the beastkin she had killed. Her head creaked around, staring off into the dark of the forest.
The other quick blood fled while we were fighting. We must find them.
Kyra waved aside Yanir's eagerness. The humans were no immediate threat. They had intruded upon the forest to escape the beastkin. Fear, not malice, moved them to such action. They could neither hide nor run while they remained in the Thornwild. The trees themselves would warn the Sylvaneth where the trespassers were. The threat Kyra saw was the meaning behind the ritual scars the Twistflesh bore. They were the dominant brand of the herd chief Groth, the Root Cutter. The Beastman had proven himself a cunning and tenacious enemy of the Thornwild. Repulsed by the Sylvaneth in summer and spring, he had brought his loathsome kind back in the dead of winter, when the wild wood slept and the blood sap flowed slow in the dryads. Unlike many of his savage breed, Groth did not shun fire, and made free use of it in his efforts against the Thornwild. What the herd chief could not conquer and corrupt, he would destroy. It had been many winters since the war herd of Groth had moved against the Thornwild. Kyra knew the herd chief had not fallen in that last battle, but she had let herself hope he was dead. The season of rulership among the Twistflesh was usually brief, and they were known to eat their disgraced leaders. Somehow, Groth had endured, and his hunters again trespassed in the Thornwild. Kyra thought of Groth's old attacks on the Thornwild, but as she stared at the scarred corpse, her memories fled. The light of her eyes faded to a mere ember, the tremor within her wooden body slowing to a dull shiver. Her bark grew pale and wintry, and her feet dug their roots into the soil. She stood transfixed, as rigid as the most somnolent of the ancient tree lords at the heart of the forest. Only dimly could she sense the dryads rushing to her, alarmed by the change that swept over the branch wraith. Far clearer to Kyra were the images that spiraled through her consciousness. She saw the herd chief, Groth, more cruel and vicious than before. He led a vast host of the Twistflesh against the Thornwild, a war herd such as Kyra had seen when the great armies of chaos raged across the whole of Gur. The beastkin marched against the forest, pulling down the trees with their brute strength, cutting down the groves with their axes, burning down the wildwood with their fires. Sylvaneth hunters were pulled down by packs of baying beasthounds. Venerable treemen were crushed in the paws of horn-headed gorgons. Companies of tree revenants were chopped to splinters by a tide of howling warriors. Dryads perished under the blades of goat-faced killers, their blood sap spattered across the land. She saw Groth standing triumphant at the heart of the forest, the sylvan conclave broken at his feet. The invader raised a megalithic herdstone where the heart of the Thornwild had been. Her spirit railed against the profane glyphs that marched across the crude monolith's face, symbols etched in adoration of chaos. She cried out in defiance as the Beast Lord planted this evil seed, forever corrupting the forest, twisting and defiling all that would ever grow there. The vision drew back, speeding away from Groth's savage victory. Kyra saw the events unfold in reverse, filing back from the herd chief's rise to Beast Lord. The Twistflesh flocked to join Groth, swelling the numbers of his war herd to a mighty horde. She saw the great power that pulsed through the goat-headed monster, could almost hear the magical energies that coursed through his body. Even the mightiest, most colossal of the Twistflesh creatures balked at the slightest glance from Groth and abased themselves before him. Further, the vision retreated, showing a dark cavern deep beneath the earth. Piles of worked stone were scattered about the cave, their immense age evident by the stalactites and stalagmites that sprouted from their fallen shapes. Kyra felt the clammy chill of the air, heard the deep and thunderous breathing of some vast creature. A titanic body lay hidden in the darkness, but she could distinctly see Groth standing upon that body. He was ripping into a colossal heart with his fangs. With every bite, Kyra sensed the power swelling inside the chieftain, magnifying him from mere herd chief to mighty beast lord. In the weird reversal of her vision, Groth set the heart back into the chest of the fallen titan. Posed atop the body, he swung his axe against the breast while the flesh flowed back into each cut. Still farther into the past, the images withdrew. Kyra saw the dank tunnels that burrowed their way deep into the earth, strange etchings in the walls, weird relics scattered about the floors. There were pools of molten fire and rivers of icy water bubbling and flowing far from the light of the sun. Eerie things crept through the darkness, falling on one another in bursts of desperate savagery. Groth led a small pack of his bestial followers through the tunnels, drawn ever downwards by the gory prize he sought to claim. Again the images receded, and Kyra saw a towering mountain. Its slopes were rocky, bare cliffs, standing exposed in many places. Other parts were covered by gnarled trees, a forest of dark and grim aspect that struck her with a sense of foreboding. Not the taint of chaos, but an enmity that was older and more primal than anything she had ever conceived of. Across the slopes of this gargantuan mountain, Groth and his pack were making their way. They emerged from the black opening of a cavern and started to descend the rocks into the dark forests of the mountain. At last, Groth was at the base and staring up towards the heights, eyes alight with nightmarish ambitions. Kyra reeled as the visions left, deserting her as abruptly as they had set upon her. A ragged moan rose from within as the blood sap resumed its flow and the roots recoiled into her feet. The glow of her eyes flared back into life and her bark darkened to its more usual brown. She looked across the visages of the dryads, feeling their concern.
"I am well," Kyra said. "There is no need to fear for me."
Ishia stood at Kyra's side, the leaves on her head trembling with anxiety.
"What happened to you?" she asked.
Kyra did not answer directly. How could she explain something that was beyond her understanding?
"I am uncertain what beset me," she answered at last.
She kept the fear buried deep inside her heartwood. It could do no good to reveal the particulars of that dire vision, at least not to the dryads. There were others who had the wisdom to help her.
"I must go and speak with the Sylvan Conclave," Kyra decided.
She looked over the other dryads. She would explain just enough to excuse her haste.
"These twist flesh bear the brand of Groth the Rootcutter. The conclave must be told he has returned."
The dryads reacted as Kyra expected, with a mixture of fear and anger at their old enemy's name. They did not look forward to fighting against the war herds again, but neither would they shun such eventuality. The Sylvaneth would not cede a single blade of grass to the twist flesh.
"Kyra, the other quick blood cannot be forgotten,"
Yanir said. Unlike the other dryads, her fingers retained their clawed aspect. Ishia turned to the branch wraith.
"They only came here to hide from the twist flesh."
Yanir stepped towards the young dryad, her gnarled face peeling back in a pitiless glower.
"The quick blood have violated this forest too many times with torch and axe. None of their breed can be allowed to trespass here."
"If we force these to leave, they will not come back,"
Ishia protested. Kyra rested a sympathetic hand on Ishia's shoulder.
"Mercy is a luxury those who guard the Thornwild cannot indulge. Perhaps the humans would not return, or their story would bring others to the forest. We would betray the Thornwild if we took that risk.
She turned towards Yanir.
I must seek the Conclave. This duty I entrust to you. The Quickblood cannot leave the forest.
Yanir had no mixed feelings towards the humans. Of all the dryads, she was the best one to put in command. She would ensure the intruders were dealt with. Kyra felt a pang of guilt when she met Ishia's gaze, but there was nothing else to be done. Humans were too uncertain in their ways to be depended upon. The only way to predict what they might do in the future was to take that future from them. Ancient trees of every description grew from the black earth of the Sylvan Conclave. Pines, hoary with centuries, stabbed high into the air, their tops drooping from the weight of their needles. Silver-barked oaks with serpent-like ground roots stretched away for hundreds of yards, their thick branches reaching out to form complex tangles of stems and leaves. It was a display of every manner of tree in the Thornwild, the oldest and stoutest of their kind, called from wherever they had grown in the forest to sink their roots. The trees were impressive to Kyra. They always had been. The vibrations that sounded from them were more complex than those of younger trees. There was wisdom and meaning there, if one but had the patience to listen. Everything the ancient trees had experienced was recorded in their rings and drawn into their thrumming melody. Among the ancient trees were equally Elder Sylvaneth. Some were so old that their spirits were but the merest flicker, their eyes naught but a distant twinkle of light. Their years were beyond easy reckoning, even for Kyra. Many of them were as stolid and unmoving as the trees surrounding them, only the faint suggestion of an animate shape betraying their true nature. The voice of the Conclave impressed itself on Kyra's mind, rolling slowly through her consciousness. They were ponderous in their deliberation, cautious about reaching judgment in all things. A day had passed since she brought to them the dire vision that had come to her. The sun had risen and set with no decision from the ancient Sylvaneth. Now that decision was reached.
You are a branch wraith, a priestess of the wild, the Conclave stated. The very fact of your being places importance upon the vision you have witnessed. However, there is no precedent for what you have undergone. Not the oldest among us can declare the provenance of this vision. Because of this, there is no certainty of its truth or its timeliness. How much of what you have seen is already past, and how much of it is yet to unfold? Are the things yet to come immutable? Or may they never come to season? These are questions of grave import, for which there is no absolute answer.
Kyra bowed her head to the assembled elders.
In uncertainty, there may also be found opportunity, a chance to change what I have seen.
Her hand wove through the air, leaving behind it a glowing afterimage that described the brand of Groth.
This mark was upon the Twistflesh who intruded into the Thornwild. There is no mistake here. Groth the Rootcutter is back. If that much of my warning is true, can we reject the rest?
We can neither accept nor reject what you have seen.
The Conclave's words thrummed through Kyra's spirit.
We cannot say whether your vision was intended as warning or deceit.
One of the Sylvaneth stirred, a wooden giant 4 times as tall as Kyra, its bark pitted by the wear of wind and rain. An owl perched in the hulking tree man's branches and regarded her with a steely gaze. The hollows in the timber giant's face were dark and empty, devoid of the fey light that shone from the visages of other Sylvaneth. As it strode forwards, the trees shifted their roots from the blind tree man's path.
I was old, even before you sought refuge in the Thorn Wild,
the tree man told Kyra, his voice cracking like branches under heavy snow.
There was much I saw before my essence grew tired and I withdrew into somnolence. There is something I can tell you of the mountain in your vision. It is a place the Quickblood call Beast Grave, a place of immense power and immense danger. An eldritch force holds dominion there, something as ancient as the land itself. It is capricious in its ways, and none can say for certain how the mountain will suffer their intrusion. Some find swift destruction, others depart with wondrous treasure. Many are simply never heard from again, vanished from the knowing of even the wisest.
This beast grave is where Groth seeks power, Kyra said. Unless the enemy has already claimed it, the conclave reminded her. As stewards of the Thorn Wild, we cannot say that this is not a possibility. If Groth is already Beast Lord and bringing his armies against the forest, we must use everything in our power to defy him.
Kyra swept her gaze across the trees and the elder Sylvaneth among them.
What if the vision is true? What if Groth can still be stopped?
The huge tree man bent its head towards Kyra. The owl hopped down to a lower branch and peered into her eyes.
We will not dismiss that it is possible. It is a risk we have evaluated carefully. Each Sylvaneth we do not retain to defend the Thornwild reduces the chances of saving the forest. But if Groth can be stopped before he can even summon the war herds to him, that chance must be taken. In your vision, the rootcutter had but a few twist flesh with him when he delved into the mountain.
This is true, Kyra admitted.
The compromise must be this. You will seek Beastgrave and try to stop Groth from ever reaching his goal.
The tree man waved one of his long arms in a chopping motion.
Strike him down. Keep him from his dark dream of atrocity. Take what resources you need to accomplish this, but know that every Sylvaneth who follows you to the mountain is one less defender to guard the Thorn Wild if these things have already come to pass. If you are wrong, and there is no chance to keep the war herds from coming.
A shudder passed through Kyra as she felt the weight of the responsibility she had been given pressing down on her. If even the conclave had doubt, why was she so certain Groth had not already done the things she had seen in her vision?
There is more,
the voice of the conclave echoed through Kyra's essence.
It is not enough to just keep Groth from this evil artifact. Simply killing Groth would leave this seed of evil there to wait for the next enemy who would make use of it. You must find this black treasure. You must learn where the artifact is and destroy it. That duty is even more vital than stopping Groth. Kill the Beast Lord, and you save the Thorn Wild for today. Destroy this evil seed, and you save the Thorn Wild from tomorrow.
Kyra bowed her head to the conclave.
What can be done, I will do, she vowed.
to the last drop of my blood sap, I swear the Thornwild will be saved.
Chapter 3. Groth could still see the smoke rising from the ransacked human settlement, a greasy smear that curled up into the dawn sky. If he took a deep breath, he could catch the scent of blood and meat on the wind. He could imagine the contented brays and bleats of the beastkin as they supped upon the remains of the massacre. They would be satiated for days on the men and animals they had taken in the raid. A satiated war herd was a placid war herd. They would not wonder where their chieftain had gone, not until they grew hungry again. Groth turned to the woods and the jagged hills beyond. These were still familiar lands. The mountain Sorgas promised to lead him to was far beyond these regions, far beyond any territory Groth had prowled. There was no chance the herd chief would be back before his followers questioned his absence. Some aspiring champion would rise up to claim the leadership. Perhaps several of them would fight to see who would be the new chieftain. It was of small consequence to Groth which of his old underlings claimed the title of herd chief while he was gone. The usurper would not hold it long. When he returned from the beast grave, he would reclaim the war herd as his own. He would seek others and build such a horde as Gurr had never seen. No, the reason for stealing away from the war herd while they were fat on the spoils of victory was calculated for a different reason. Groth did not want any of those ambitious rivals following him, dogging his tracks along the way, trying to steal the power that waited for him in the depths of Beastgrave. The beastkin who followed Groth were the most loyal of his war herd, carefully chosen by him for the trek to the mountain, 20 warriors to challenge the unknown dangers of the journey. The herd chief would have taken more, but he was wary of making his absence more notable by drawing too great an entourage. A few missing beastmen might be out hunting stray man-flesh, like Tharg had. Groth was annoyed at the hunter for leaving, for he'd taken the animalistic Frang with him. The beast-hound's sharp nose would have been an asset on this journey. And, of course, the creature was too savage to have any notions of treachery. Frang simply did as it was told. Groth's eyes narrowed as he focused on the cloaked shape of Sorgas. He wished he was able to say the same for the wolf-faced shaman. Sorgas was a turnskin. He'd been born to human parents and slowly developed his bestial aspect. As Groth understood it, the parents had hidden him for many years until, at last, the turnskin was discovered. The entire family was mobbed and thrown out of their village, left to perish in the wild. Only Sorgas did not perish. Groth suspected he had eaten his parents that first winter. For a time he existed as a hermit, deep in the forest, preying on whatever and whoever he could catch. Human, beastkin, grot, it made no difference to Sorgas. Some of his victims ended up in his larder, others were offerings to the three-eyed raven, the god of magic and cunning. One day, without warning or explanation, Sorgas appeared at the Blackfold Herdstone and proclaimed himself a messenger from the gods. There were some who challenged his claims, but his magic was such that neither champion or shaman was able to overcome him. Grudgingly, Sorgas had been accepted into the war herd. Groth scowled as he remembered what happened next. Sorgas had encouraged him in his challenge against the old herd chief, offering to lend his magic to support him in that struggle. Groth had been too cagey to accept that assistance, biding his time and waiting for an opportunity that would favour him without the shaman's meddling. He was certain that Sorgas resented Groth's success, won by strategy rather than sorcery. Sorgas wanted a herd chief he could control, and Groth refused to be controlled. It would have been better to simply kill Sorgas, but Groth saw too much use for the shaman's spells. He was not content to be a simple chieftain. Even before the vision in the flames, he had ambition. he would see the foul domains of man brought down, the delvings of the beard jaws turned to ruin, the witch woods of the tree fiends destroyed. The wild places belonged to the beastkin and to the beastkin alone. Sorgas promised that Groth could make that vision a reality. Groth was too tempted by that promise to reject it out of hand. He was also too wary to trust the conniving shaman completely. Sorgas did nothing unless it was to his own benefit. As though he felt Groth's eyes upon him, Sorgas turned back towards the herd chief. He leaned on his bray staff, using it to help support him as he descended a small knoll and joined Groth.
"We are leaving the war herd's territory," Sorgas said.
"Groth, know this,"
the herd chief glanced at the beastman who had followed him from the settlement.
"All know this."
Sorgas's fur bristled at the scornful tone.
"I tell you this because we do not know what lies ahead of us."
"Use magic,"
Groth snapped.
"Call spirits. They tell Sorgas. Sorgas tell Groth."
"There is a limit to all power. Just as there are only so many warriors in your tribe, so there is only so much magic I can draw upon. If I employ my spells for petty things, I will not be able to help when my magic is needed most."
Groth scratched his ear and turned over the shaman's words. It was unlike Sorgas to so freely admit any weakness. Either it was the truth, or it was part of some ploy, or it was both at once.
"Sorgas, show way."
Groth waved the auric cleaver at the shaman.
"The way ahead is perilous. If you lose me, who will lead you to the mountain?"
Sorgas shook his head.
"You might never find your way, and while you were looking, some other might steal the power you seek."
There was a hint of mockery in the shaman's words. Groth loathed the glib way Sorgas spoke, the slyness of his tongue that always made him think of humans and their trickery.
"Send scouts ahead of us,"
Sorgas advised, stopping short of making the suggestion sound like an order.
"They can spy out the lay of the land and warn us what dangers may be ahead of us."
Groth glanced back at his followers. Sorgas was baiting him. He'd even said that while magic was the shaman's strength, warriors were the strength of a herd chief. It was a test to see how far Groth could be pushed. If he sent some of his followers ahead as scouts, he would be weakening his strength. If he refused, he would be showing weakness.
"Ja! Koog!"
Groth growled as he turned and faced his warriors. He waved a shaggy arm at the jagged hills.
"Be scout! Seek trail!"
The two Ungors Groth called came loping forwards. Their faces were not quite so manlike as most of their short-horned kind. One had a bovine cast to its features, while the other resembled an equine. It was common wisdom among the beastkin that the further from the human shape, the sharper a warrior's senses. If he was going to risk warriors, Groth wanted them to at least be capable of passing a warning to the rest of his warband.
"Great war chief,"
the equine-headed Jar began to protest the command Groth had given him. The herd chief kicked the Ungor and knocked him to the ground. Groth glanced at Sorgas, and his lips peeled back from his fangs. He would show the shaman how strong he was. Groth would show him that he did not need to be afraid to spend his strength. Jar lifted his spear in an attempt to fend off the massive cleaver as Groth brought it chopping down. The crude blade snapped the wooden shaft like a twig and did the same to the arm that held it before it crunched down into the Ungor's chest. Jar was killed instantly. Groth looked up from his gory work and glowered at Koog. There was no question that she would obey him. He turned his gaze on the rest of his warriors. any spark of dissent there had been quelled by Jar's blood. His eyes roved across the horned beastkin until he spotted a bray with the curled horns of a ram jutting from his skull.
"Togra, bee scout," he snarled.
The named beastman darted forwards. Together with Coog, he was soon hurrying through the woods and towards the distant hills. The herd chief faced Sorgas, searching for some sign of trepidation on that lupine face. He was disappointed to find the serpentine eyes showed no trace of intimidation. Groth's brutality had failed to impress the shaman. Annoyed that the murderous show of authority might have somehow been exactly what Sorgas wanted, Groth made a sweeping motion to his warriors. Excited growls rose from the gores and brays as they rushed forwards and fell upon Jar's corpse. Knives and claws went to work, swiftly butchering the body. It was the savage law of the wild. Meat was never wasted. The ground felt strange under Groth's hooves. They were several days away from their territory, far beyond the ken of even the furthest of his hunters. Forests and hills had given way to sparse, scraggly woods and strange trees with thin trunks and thorny leaves. The earth was parched, the soil like sand. Ugly outcroppings of rocks littered the horizon, their sides mottled with a bewildering array of coloured clay. Enormous hairy bees used holes in that clay for their burrows. Their wings struggled to keep them aloft as they prowled through the air. The dog-sized insects were wary of the beastkin, but they were not so shy about the creatures they were accustomed to seeing. Buffalo grazing on the needle-leafed trees were felled by the barbed stingers, always struck from behind by their flying killers. The bees did not feed on the animals they killed, at least not immediately. Groth saw them several times hovering about some old carcass. It seemed they waited for their prey to rot before setting upon it. They would use their mandibles to chew the softened meat into a kind of jellied paste that they rolled into balls and stuck to their back legs.
"Vulture stings,"
Groth named the hideous bees. He gazed across the dreary woods at the clay mounds the insects called home.
"Not near nests."
He swung around to Sorgas to make it clear to him that the words were a statement, not a question.
"Many stings in rocks. Kill too much."
The shaman pointed his bray staff towards the horizon.
"The mountain is that way," he said.
Coog and Togra glanced warily from Groth to Sorgas. The two scouts were less than eager to move any closer to the vulture sting hives. The herd chief considered ordering them to do so anyway, simply as a display of dominance over them, but he resisted the impulse. The scouts would achieve nothing except to provoke the giant insects. Their loss would not get Groth closer to Beastgrave. Groth peered into Sorgas's cold eyes.
"Around,"
he grunted.
"Take trail around vulture stings."
He looked over at his scouts.
"Find trail."
"If there is another trail," Sorgas said. He gestured again with his staff. "The swiftest course is the direct one. Even if there is a way around, we will lose time taking it."
The herd chief shook his head. He was not going to let Sorgas lead him by the nose. Just like the scouts, the shaman needed to know who was leader.
"No vulture stings," he said. "Around. Take trail around."
The talons of Sorgas's hand clicked against the side of the bray staff, a habit the mystic developed whenever he was irritated. Groth felt a sense of petty triumph to have provoked the shaman.
"You may find the way around to be more dangerous," Sorgas warned. "And there may be others looking for your prize."
Groth stamped his hoof and glared at Sorgas.
"Groth, take power. Power belong Groth. Sorgas say."
His hands tightened around the big cleaver as an infuriating thought occurred to him.
Sorgas say only Groth?
The shaman nodded his head, a human gesture that only angered Groth further.
I told no one. It was you who was in the vision. Only you are meant to claim the power you saw.
That good, Groth decided. Sorgas, remember, power only for Groth. Groth only, Beast Lord.
He turned back to the scouts.
Find new trail, he said.
Coog and Togra slipped away, each in opposite directions. They would find a way around the hives.
We will lose time, Sorgas warned again.
Groth looked at the rest of his warriors. He saw the uneasiness in their eyes, the subtle twitches that passed beneath their fur, the way they fidgeted with their weapons, the 100 different ways they betrayed their anxiety. They were as loath to run into the bees as the scouts were.
Sorgas worry, Groth told the shaman. Worry prize gone. Worry Groth eat Sorgas instead.
The wolf-faced mystic bristled at the threat. Good. It was something to bother him. Groth was not so proud to ignore that Sorgas was smarter than him. The only thing he could do to match the shaman's cunning was to be unpredictable. The less Sorgas could depend on how Groth would react, the more dangerous it would be for him to plot something. The shaman cast an apprehensive eye back the way they had come. For a moment, he looked as though he would say something. He turned and stalked off, his talismans jangling against his horns. Groth grunted in amusement. Let him sulk. As a turnskin, he could never have rule over the war herds. He needed someone like Groth to be dominant, to take the power in the mountain. That made the herd chief essential to his designs. No, Sorgas could not do without Groth. But there would come a time when Groth would no longer need Sorgas. Coog found the trail Groth needed to avoid the vulture stings. Once Togra returned, he sent both scouts ahead of the war herd to lead the way. Coog picked her way down a rocky defile. Togra was a bit behind the other scout, his bow at the ready. The two Ungors were wary as they climbed from the plain into the narrow defile. The bottom was sand, a dull red in colouring. Weird walls and lines marked the surface, erratic patterns that swept across the ground from side to side. They reminded Sorgas of ripples across a pond flowing away to opposite shores. A sense of threat nagged at the shaman. He could tell the other beastkin felt it too. Even Groth prowled the rocks with agitation. The herd chief growled and snapped at any of his warriors who came too close, perhaps out of worry that they would notice his uneasiness. The offending beastmen would cringe away in deference to their leader, the bigger ones venting their anger against the smaller Brays and Ungors. With the visible menace of the vulture stings to unite them, the beastkin had drawn together, seeking security in numbers. Whatever threat was hanging over them was not so easily quantified. So they shunned the closeness of the herd, instinctively hoping that the danger would strike in some other when it finally descended on them. It was animalistic in its simplicity, the peril of one acting as the alert for the others. Yet the weaker still had enough sense to crowd towards the stronger for protection, until that strength lashed out at them. Sorgas felt contempt for these brutes as he watched them climbing into the fissure. They were not joined by any sense of purpose, only a mutual hatred for everything else. Humans, Duardin, Oryks, Grots, it did not matter to the beastkin. All were despised, enemies to be brought down and devoured. The only reason the Gors and their ilk banded together was to expand the scope of their attacks. There was no planning, no strategy, only attack and attack and attack, so long as there was the strength to prevail. The shaman noticed that Coog was creeping out onto the sand. She moved with uncertainty, her ears flicking with anxiety. The Ungor glanced all around as she started down the bed of the defile. Sorgas sensed that the menace was about to reveal itself. With his attention focused on Coog, he missed the first faint shiver that passed through the rocks. He spotted the movement only when a great slab of stone reared up from the slope and plunged down at the scout. Tipping on its end, the stone smashed down on her before she could react. The Ungor was crushed under its weight, blood seeping away from the pulverized body across the sand. The beastkin looked on in shock as more rocks slid down onto the sand, gathering wherever Coog's blood flowed. Togra, slinking in the wake of Coog, was almost caught by a second slab that slid after him from the side of the defile. The scout turned and leapt onto the slab that had smashed the other Ungor. From his perch, he watched as the block that had tried to smash him fragmented into smaller rocks, each piece slithering across the sand to the nearest slope. The curious patterns in the sand were explained. They were the trails left by these animate stones.
"Togra, back!"
Groth shouted at the scout. The herd chief started to charge down towards the sand. Sorgas held his bray staff out and blocked the chieftain.
"Togra, stay where you are," he warned the scout.
If he did not need the herd chief, he would have let him keep going. He tried to explain to Groth why he should stay on the slope.
"These stones," the shaman said, stamping his foot against the rocks, "prey on whatever steps on the sand. They come together in amalgamations to feed on blood."
He gestured with his staff at the sand.
"They must use the sand to let them absorb."
"Togra not eaten,"
Groth objected.
"The stones need both blood and sand to feed,"
Sorgas repeated.
"Togra is safe where he is, at least until the amalgamation is finished feeding and returns to the slopes."
Groth stared at the far side of the defile. The scouts had found this route past the vulture stings, but to make use of it, the war herd needed to be on the opposite slope.
"We cross," Groth decided. "Togra, cross,"
he bellowed at the scout. The Ungor dipped his head in deference to his chieftain and stalked out to the edge of the slab. Togra hesitated, then flung himself out over the sands. His hooves scrambled on the inert rocks on the far side.
"We cross,"
Groth snarled at the rest of his warriors.
"Togra was lucky," Sorgas said.
He pointed to the gap between the edge of the slab and the other slope.
"Do you think you can make such a leap?"
Groth thought about that. Surprisingly, he had a solution to the problem. Before any of his warriors knew what was happening, the herd chief grabbed the closest bray. The creature had only a moment to bleat in distress before Groth's fangs were worrying at his throat. The chieftain hefted the bleeding beast man onto one shoulder and strode down to the bottom of the slope. Displaying his vicious strength, he lifted the body with one hand and shook it over the sand. Amalgamations of stone, smaller than the slabs that had smashed Coog and tried to crush Togra, tumbled down into the sand. They slithered to wherever the bray's blood fell. Groth stamped his hooves on the closest of them and stepped out from the slope. He shook the body again and sent more blood onto the sand. Again, small amalgamations of stone were drawn to the gore. Groth looked back at Sorgas, blood dripping from his fangs.
"We cross,"
the herd chief said, this time with a note of victory. Still shaking the dying bray, he drew more rocks down from the slopes. Bit by bit and drop by drop, Groth was creating a pathway, a bridge across the sand. Some of Groth's warriors did not wait for their chieftain to reach the other side before following him across the bridge. Sorgas kept his eyes on the slab that had caught Coog. He wanted to evaluate how slowly the stones fed before venturing out over the sand. Groth snorted at the shaman's hesitance.
"Spellseer afraid,"
he laughed. Several of his warriors added their own howls to his humour. He lifted the now dead Bray above his head and threw the body into the middle of the sand. The beastkin shifted aside as dozens of smaller stones clattered together and melded into a big slab that tipped and tumbled after the body.
Sorgas cross now.
The shaman stepped out onto the stones. Sorgas reminded himself that he still needed the herd chief. He had proven to be the strongest in the war herd many times. He was the only one who might be strong enough to withstand the trials that awaited within Beastgrave. Sorgas indulged in a slight smile as he walked across the newly amalgamated slab. If there was one constant that characterized chaos, it was change. The fissure of the Hungry Rocks was many days behind Groth's warriors. The war herd had trudged through icy marshes, climbed over desolate hills, fought past the grazing grounds of shaggy mammoths, and crossed eel-infested streams. The score of followers that had been chosen by the herd chief at the beginning of the trek had dwindled down to a dozen. Yet, as Groth emerged from the green hell of a slimy jungle, he felt a flush of triumph surge through him. The sacrifices and hazards had all been worth it. Ahead of the beastkin stretched a wasteland of windswept spires of rock and jagged canyons, but beyond that terrain loomed a landmark that was burned into his memory. It was the towering mass of Beastgrave, the mountain that had appeared to him in his fiery vision, so immense it vanished into the clouds. The mountain held within its depths the power to make him Beast Lord, and to crush the human kingdoms beneath his hooves.
"There it is, just as I promised,"
Sorgas said as he stepped from the jungle and approached Groth. His ophidian eyes glittered in the last daylight as night encroached upon the land.
"There is where your destiny awaits you."
Groth studied the mystic carefully. With the mountain before them, Sorgas was no longer an indispensable guide. In that aspect, his utility was at an end. He could be disposed of, and Groth would still be able to find his way, an eventuality that Sorgas must have prepared for. On the journey, the shaman had only reluctantly employed his magic. Groth suspected he had been husbanding his spells, saving his arcane energies for this moment. Cunning, as much as brutality, had made Groth chieftain. It was not a question of choosing one over the other, but rather knowing how to blend the two qualities together. If Sorgas was ready for some kind of confrontation now, then it was not the time to face him. When Groth brought him to account, it would be on his own terms, not the shaman's.
"Groth soon, Beast Lord,"
the herd chief stated, drool spilling from his mouth.
"Sorgas soon, great shaman. God's reward, Sorgas."
Groth searched for any hint he was mollified by the flattery.
"I do what will serve the dark gods,"
Sorgas said, his claws caressing the talismans hanging from his horns.
"It is enough reward to do their bidding."
"Gods see Groth soon, Beast Lord,"
he reminded Sorgas of this key aspect of the vision, the promise that burned in his heart like a flame.
"Of course," Sorgas said. "That is what you saw in the fire."
There was uncertainty in the shaman's eyes. It passed too quickly for Groth to be sure he had seen it at all. Groth turned and watched his warriors creep out from the jungle.
"Dark now. Make camp."
He waved the huge cleaver towards a barren patch of ground where a natural wall provided some measure of shelter. The beastkin stalked over to the place and started dropping the provisions they carried.
"It has been a hard march," Sorgas said. "We could all use a rest."
A cold smile spread on Groth's face.
"Stop!"
he bellowed at his warriors.
"We go,
March in dark.
The herd chief looked over at Sorgas.
Sleep later. March now.
He grunted in amusement when he saw the shaman's shoulders sag in disappointment. Whatever Sorgas expected him to do, Groth was determined to confound him.
Togra, take scouts,
Groth snarled at the Ungor.
Hunt food, find path.
At their chieftain's command, Togra and three of the smaller beastmen loped away into the gathering darkness. Though they were more man-like than the larger Gors, their senses were far sharper than those of a man. They would be able to find their way in the dark. Groth strode through the ranks of his frustrated warriors. He knew they wanted to rest as eagerly as Sorgas. They did not have the fire of ambition egging them on, goading them to greater and greater effort. But, like the shaman, they were careful not to express their displeasure. The herd chief's word was law. To question his orders was to invite a quick and savage death.
Follow Groth,
the chieftain growled. He raised the auric cleaver to remind his warriors of his strength. He grinned at Sorgas to remind him of his cunning. There was a word the shaman had used that had pleased Groth. He used it as he barked encouragement to his Gors.
Follow Groth to destiny.
Sorgas gnashed his fangs as his foot stamped down on another thorn. He leaned against his bray staff and pinched the offending burr from his skin. This night march, Groth insisted on, was vexing. Just another of the multitude of annoyances the herd chief had inflicted upon Sorgas since he had become leader. The shaman drew on his magic to let his gaze penetrate the darkness sufficiently that he could see Groth up ahead. The herd chief did not seem concerned that Sorgas was falling behind. In his arrogance, he probably thought it amusing that the turnskin was not able to keep up. The decision to march all night was another of those petty reversals that Groth thought was so clever. Sorgas let his enhanced vision sweep over their surroundings. Some spiky palm trees and a sort of sticky fern were the only real foliage, sprouting from the dirt in small clumps here and there. Big heaps of boulders were everywhere, though most numerous at the bases of the wind-ravaged rock formations. Those features had an almost tortured quality, twisted into strange arches and spires by the caprices of the elements. In some ways, they struck Sorgas as weird echoes of Beastgrave itself, stunted siblings or the deformed spawn of the colossal mountain. Beastgrave. Sorgas did not focus enough enchantment into his eyes to pierce the night so that he could actually see the mountain, but he sensed it all the same, monstrous and imposing, a black titan sprawled across the horizon. There were other things to be seen in the dark of night, and Sorgas felt a deep satisfaction when he saw them creeping among the rocks. Groth thought himself quite clever, pushing ahead instead of letting his followers rest. They would have had a defensible position with the wall at their backs. The warriors were spread out, and with their scouts so far ahead that even the shaman couldn't see them. Groth was so intent on what was before him that he didn't waste much thought on what might be chasing after him. Groth's absence had been noticed. A second group of beastkin had taken up the herd chief's trail. The shaman saw the atavistic Frang crawling on the rocks, and it was certain the beasthound's unrivaled sense of smell let them follow the track. All the beastkin were from Groth's herd. Among them, Sorgas spotted the hulking Chagrak. The ram-headed Bestigor was just the sort to seize an opportunity to depose Groth while he was away from the rest of the war herd. Chagrak was not exactly brilliant, but he did have the sort of conniving streak in him that detested a fair challenge. Sorgas quickly evaluated the positioning of Chagrak's followers. There were almost 30 of them, more than double Groth's warriors. They were spreading out like the legs of a spider, intent on catching the herd chief's retinue between them. If Groth had not pushed his beastmen so hard, if they were not so fatigued, they might have noticed the ambush that was about to catch them. It was possible to warn Groth. A display of magic would throw the beastkin into confusion and spoil the ambush. Sorgas could manage it easily. But he was not going to. He had fallen far enough behind that he was outside the attention of Chagrak's pack. When the trap was sprung, he would not be caught in it. The ways of chaos were intricate and subject to the whims of the gods. The destiny Groth had seen for himself was not immutable, however much the herd chief wanted to believe it was. Sorgas wondered if another champion might be just as useful as Groth, maybe even more so, since Chagrak could prove less unpredictable and therefore more malleable to the shaman's purposes. Sorgas clasped his hands together and hissed an incantation. The spell he evoked drew the shadows tighter around him, hiding him from sight. Other conjurations obscured his scent and muffled the sound of his heart. He felt confident he was concealed from even the keen senses of Frang. Safe from detection, he watched as Chagrak's warriors closed in on those loyal to Groth. Chagrak started the attack. The Bestigor reared up atop one of the rocks and gave voice to a bellowing war cry. As he did, the ram-headed champion hurled a barbed spear down at Groth's warriors. The shaft crunched into the chest of a Gor who was marching a small distance from the herd chief. The stricken beastman crashed down on his side, a groan of agony rasping from him as he feebly pawed at the spear. From all sides, the rest of Chagrak's pack leapt into action. Howling and shrieking, they charged into Groth's followers. One Bray was pulled down by Frang, the beasthound's jaws snapping tight about the screaming warrior's neck. An elk-headed Gor was slashed by the axes of three Ungors and brained by the club of a fourth when he slumped to his knees. Another fighter was almost decapitated by Chagrak's glaive when the Bestigor threw himself into the fray. Groth's followers, though taken by surprise, were not overwhelmed. With the savagery of cornered wolves, they fought back. One of Chagrak's Gors collapsed in a welter of blood and brains when an axe split her skull. A treacherous Ungor was spitted on a spear by a loyal warrior. Groth himself split an attacker in half with a hard swing of the auric cleaver.
"Chagrak, traitor!"
Groth roared as he decapitated one of the Bestigor's fighters. He kicked the severed head away and stomped on the quivering corpse.
"All follow Chagrak, die now!"
The Bestigor slashed his glaive through the body of a